Episode number 217 of the Tartan Running Shorts podcast, hosted by Lewis Walker, myself, Kyle Gregg. So, Lewis, I think you're back in Spey Bay, and you're hot off the press of another successful athlete win, you know, in achievement, and we have none other than Dougie Selman on the show tonight. So we're going to talk all things. There's a Selmania, isn't it?
That's Selmania. That's right. It's
the new buzzword, eh? But before that, I haven't even asked how you are. How are you, Lewis?
Yeah, well, I'm better than you, I think, Kyle. From the sounds,
think so. I'm slightly under the weather, but
yeah. you're kind of manning up and pulling through as you always do.
As always, I'll do what I can. But I mean, you know, Lewis, you wear many different hats. You're an athlete in your own right, or perhaps not what you used to be, but you still train.
rub it in, Kyle. Yeah.
you're a podcaster now. You're a coach. To many athletes and, you know, and all the other things that you do. So, but I mean, it's, you know, for you, I mean, it must be amazing just to see the success of your athletes, you know, like seeing them reach goals and surpass them as well. What's that like for you?
Well, I think one of the key things is, you know, there's a coach-athlete relationship. And Dougie and I have built that up over a very long time. It's more than a decade now. And so, you know, Dougie's always been a good athlete, a successful athlete. And at the same time, it does take some time to get the benefits of all the coaching and the work that you put in and get it right on the day. And it's no joke that, you know, but probably about 3 or 4 years ago, I said to Dougie, you really need to be doing an ultra. You need to be going towards that. And he wasn't very keen. But, you know, eventually I managed to twist his arm and last year he debuted very successfully. And so from a coach-athlete point of view, it's great to have that kind of mature relationship over a period of time where both athlete and coach have an input in terms of what you're going to do, how you're going to do it. You know, we alter things based on feedback. But to culminate in Dougie's triumph, and I was down there to see it. You know, it was a fabulous day at Perth, just a fabulous finish in the last lap, which we'll get Dougie to explain when he comes on. But great to be there.
Well, why don't we get him on now? Since he's in the waiting room in the lobby. Let's get him on and let's see how he gets on. And you know, this is Dougie's been on the show before, I think. Yeah. I can't remember what episode it was, but, you know, Dougie's better half, Jenny, has also been on the show. And I believe Jenny was competing at the weekend, was she, as well? Or last weekend?
That was the previous weekend. So, you know, she was part of the Fife AC winning team in the Scottish National Relays.
Of course, yeah. Wow, it's a talented family, eh?
Yeah, no, Jenny's buggered off to Portugal this past week.
I see that.
left Dougie to recover.
Poor guy. Let's see if he's managed to get up and down the steps in good time, eh? So without further ado, here is Dougie Selman, the British 100-kilometre champion.
Hello, Dougie, and welcome to Tartan Running Shorts. We believe it's not your first time here, but Kyle couldn't quite remember how long ago it was since you were last here.
I think it was after Loch Ness Marathon, so it would have been 2022.
So,
that's
2 years ago.
Of course. Yeah. and here you are again, you know, another victory to your belt, and, you know, slightly longer distance this time. And, you know, on the 2022, it wasn't a time where you were probably considering, you know, 100Ks, or at least maybe Lewis is starting to tinker with the idea of perhaps he should run longer. How do you feel about doing, you know, 2.5 times the distance, Dougie?
I think by that point in 2022, we'd probably started thinking about it a little bit more. It was probably in around June sort of time that year that we'd sort of discussed maybe looking towards doing the 100K. But at that point, I think I'd only ever completed one marathon. So there was quite a lot of prep that would need to go into moving up to 100K. So yeah, there was a bit of a planning phase for that. So yeah, by Loch Ness sort of time, I think it was something we were thinking about, but
yeah,
building towards cautiously.
I think it would be really good to know, as like, I mean, obviously we've had you on the show before, but just like I've known you as an athlete since I was a kid, because, you know, I trained with Mark Mitchell, and you know, you as a junior were a very good junior, and but albeit very, very short distances compared to what you're kind of doing now, and the range that you have is you know, perhaps maybe not now, you probably don't have, you certainly won't have that top end speed anymore, but
I definitely don't, no.
So like, just talk us through, like, briefly, you know, what your background in your running journey has been like, you know, since you were a junior.
Yeah, so I guess like a lot of people, when I started running when I was under 13. So for a long time, you're just sort of doing all the different events, although it was probably quite clear that I was naturally gravitating towards more of an 800 than a javelin or a shot put. That was quite clear fairly early on. But yeah, in my late sort of teens and early 20s, I was very much focused on sort of 800, 1500, and probably more 800 than 1500 even. So at that point, more of a sort of speed focus, and I had a degree of success there at sort of junior level. Trained really hard at that point with a sort of talented group, like you say, Mark Mitchell was in that group, Chris Gawson was in that group.
Yeah,
coming through that group was a very young Chris O'Hare, and yeah, it was a very intense training environment that I think gave me quite a lot of success when I was young, but then cooked me for in terms of my longer term progression over those sort of shorter distances. So I then, in my sort of early 20s, had sort of stagnated a little bit over 800 and 1500, because my training philosophy up till that point had pretty much been just to kill myself 3 to 4 times a week and see what happened. And that's probably about the time I started getting coached by Lewis. That was my mid to early, it's probably about 23 at the time, and started almost immediately from that point training with a more endurance based approach, and graduated up through the distances from 5K to 10K to marathon, and training at sort of 10K marathon stuff was where I was for quite a number of years until the point we're sort of talking about.
In
2022, where I decided the next step up was what I needed, and the next step was
I like it,
big one. So,
but hey Dougie, it's some range though, you know, 800 meters. I think you ran 150, didn't you?
151.
Yeah.
So it's from 2006, so it's quite a rusty one. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, I'm not sure how many athletes we've got in Scotland who could really have that range from, you know, no. I mean, you ran a 50 point something 400 as well, I think, didn't you? Or 50.451.
The last 400 of the 100K, did
you? It felt like that. So yeah, my 400 is 50.4. So I my PBs, the PBs that are probably best are my 800 and my ultra. So and everything else in between.
So there's a bit of a kind of sine wave.
Yeah, I've just covered both ends of the spectrum.
There you go. I need to ask you though, Dougie, what's it like, you know, finally being able to come home into your own house and be a British champion and now the equal of your wife as a British champion as well?
Oh yeah, it's course, nice. Yeah. I need to sort of even up the trophy.
Yeah.
Jenny was part of Team Selman on the day though, so
yeah,
she was handing me the drinks for 6.5 hours, so there's a portion of that's hers as well, I suppose.
Yeah. Oh, I don't get
is she team, like though. Kicking is she kicking you just because, like, you know, why didn't you, you know, why aren't you still doing 800 meters now, you know, like she is, and the amount of time, you know, you have to invest in the actual race. You know, hers is over in less than 2 minutes, yours is like 6.5 hours. It's crazy. Yeah,
she found out that you would have to be sort of like concentrating for the full six and a half hours, yeah, handing me gels every like 15 minutes. I think she thought it was going to be slightly less intense than that, but
she did a great job. I was there making sure that she handed you the right stuff.
So I mean, let's talk about that. I think, Lewis, have you frozen there? You're back again.
I'm certainly moving on my screen, but can you hear me?
Yeah. Oh, loud and clear. Let's talk about the actual race. I've got a few other questions about your, you know, your kind of like just your training, but also the way you execute. Yeah, just a few other questions which maybe aren't related to the actual event itself, but like, Your first 100K was last year, and, you know, Lewis managed to twist your arm, it appears, to get you on the starting line in your first sort of like ultra Scotland selection, which clearly, you know, wouldn't be your first Scotland selection, I would imagine. I imagine you've been picked for Scotland a few times in the past.
Yeah, not for a while though.
It
was my first Scotland best in quite a long time. I can't remember how long it was. I'd run for Scotland, I think, a few times when I was a junior, definitely a few times, and then a couple of senior bests. But yeah, there was definitely a long period where I was in the international wilderness.
brilliant. So like, yeah, I mean, you know, first call up last year, and then this year you're going into it, learning and knowing about, you know, your take homes from how to, and you had a great run last year as well, but, you know, you've just gone to another level this year. So like, just kind of like, just run us up until the actual race. Like, you know, what was how did your training look compared to last year? Was it just a case of building on the foundations from last year, or was it slightly, you know, a different approach, or, you know, what did that kind of look like for you?
So I think the build up to last year's race had gone really quite well. I think when Lewis and I had sort of talked before and also after how my training block had gone, it had gone pretty well. I'd turned up to the race very fit, but with just a lot to learn, because I'd never done any other distance over a marathon. I'd done a couple of 60K training runs, but that's still such a long way short of 100K that I just had a lot to learn. My body had a lot to learn physically in terms of how do you keep running for that length of time. And I had a lot of psychological lessons to learn around how to cope with that. So I guess what I came out of that build or that race and that build up thinking was that I'd done a lot of things right, but there were a lot of things that I could use to be physically stronger this year and mentally more prepared, so that I had a sort of higher ceiling by just being fitter, but I was also going to be able to get closer towards reaching that ceiling. And some people will tell you this isn't true, because when I crossed the line last year, I think I was pretty clear I didn't want to do another 100K. But fairly quickly after that, I decided that I was going to do it this year. And we were sort of, I think, from that point already beginning to think about how to train for this year's race. And there were various things that we thought we could do to build towards that. Some of it was in terms of physical preparation, and other parts of that were the sort of psychological things that we could do. So high level summary, the physical things, getting in the gym a bit more was one of the key things. Yeah. I'd not been in a gym for quite a few years, and I was sort of injury free but quite unathletic. So I've got a lot of support over the last sort of 9 months from Rory Downey, who I think you had on the podcast a couple of weeks ago.
That's right,
And at the very outset, I went in to see Kenny Watt, who you also had on the podcast not that long ago, to do a sort of assessment of what my body was looking at, any weaknesses that I had. And that built that into my training program over the last 9 months or so, to get a little bit stronger so that I could handle a higher training load and just hopefully hold things together a bit better in the second half of the race.
And I think that's an important point, actually, Dougie, for our listeners, is that we did plan a long way out, but we'd actually stepped back and looked at where can we improve, or what do we need to bolster up to make sure that you don't break down. And one of the keys was around that strength program. And we engaged Rory to develop a particular strength program built around your needs. But he was in liaison with Kenny, and this is where when you're looking at high level performance, you've got to put it all together. So he liaised with Kenny about from a physio point of view, and what your pelvis and your running gait and various bits and pieces, and put together a really good program for you. I think that's really quite an important part.
Yeah, definitely. And I think both of them were sort of speaking to you as well, and helping that all fit together. At the beginning of that program, I couldn't really even jump off a box without looking like I was going to jump off. By the end of the program, I can now jump off a box, but still a long way to go to make me look not so much like an ultra runner in the gym.
Yeah. Do you find do you find that's helped, like, just your ultra running, or just generally, like, what do you feel like it's had the benefit it's intended to have? Because some people have doubts over whether or not it's going to be conflicting with the training and things, the timings of it. Did you feel it was something that was needed? I mean, you've obviously been in the sport for years, decades, because of we're just talking about you being at the high level end as an under 13, and here you are as a in your sort of early 30s, mid 30s, you're going into it with mid like that's some range. And I think Lewis has nailed it, and probably both of you realized, I think I'm getting older here, I need to look after my body more. How does your body feel, how does it feel based on what you've been doing with the strength and the physio?
I definitely feel like I've got a bit more athletic and a bit fitter, and I've been able to handle a higher training load than I could handle before. And I didn't really feel like I was breaking down as much as early in the 100K this time compared to last year. So I suppose all of those things would indicate that it has helped.
That's great. Yeah.
So let's speak a little bit about that training load then, because it's not just training for the ultra. I mean, our preparation was really looking at the success from the previous year seemed to be that we trained for a marathon, you went to Valencia, and then we had a wee bit of downtime after that, and then into the block for the 100K. So that was kind of like a little bit of a wave-like progression there. But in terms of your kind of overall volume in your preparation this time around, what do you think had changed and what made the difference?
What changed was an obvious change is just the volume was higher. So I suppose I was probably running 190K a week last year in the 100K builds maximum, I would have thought. Maybe between 180 and 190. And this year, I think I had maybe 9 weeks where I would have been between 200 and 215K. A week, which is, and that is big for me, but it kind of happened relatively gradually. So in the build up to the Valencia marathon, that volume was higher than it had been in the period the year before, and there were a couple of spikes in there that were similar to that sort of 200k volume. It then came back down, like you say, and then went back up for the actual block. So I think there wasn't like a huge jump at any point. It was more just like a gradual progression. So that was one of the obvious changes in terms of volume. I'd say that one of the other big changes is just the ratios of the different different pace zones that I was doing within that volume. So a higher percentage of it was at a sort of low aerobic pace zone. So I dropped the sort of threshold pace stuff a little bit more in favor of a sort of low end tempo type work. So what was maybe 320 pace last year was just a higher volume at 330. And probably I increased the amount of running that was closer to 100k pace. So I did a lot more running in the sort of 350 per k to 4 minute per k zone than I did last year. So there was a combination of I was doing more running overall, so was automatically doing more running in those pace zones, but also I was just doing a higher percentage of my running.
Yeah.
So I think I just had more time in zones that were probably more specific to running a good 100k. Yeah.
And I think that's important. I mean, for our listeners, Dougie, who work in old money, it was about 130 miles a week, you know, that you were running fairly consistently, but, you know, 125 to 130 miles a week. And one of the things that I think was really quite useful is that you often wear a heart rate monitor, and over 2 or 3 years in particular, you've come to know from your heart rate and your rate of perceived exertion and the pace you're going, just exactly what's happening in your body and how your body's responding and how to put a cap on things, you know, based on that. And I think one of the really good things that came out of this monitoring was really that you found that you were running kind of longer and at a decent pace, but with a lower heart rate, and that really was good evidence about how that LT1, that kind of lactate threshold one, or that aerobic threshold was developing for you. So tell us how you monitor yourself when you're training. How does that work for you?
Yeah, so I do use heart rate as a kind of guide. One of the things that I did in sort of September or August last year was I did some physiological testing to get an idea of my sort of heart rate zones and pace zones. So that was a sort of lactate test on a treadmill to get an idea of where my turn points roughly are, to try to have a bit more objective data to back up I feel myself, rather than just me picking numbers off a chart and trying to run to them. And I've generally used that in the sorts of sessions that we've done, so that I pretty much wear a heart rate monitor on every single session that I do, although it sometimes just doesn't really work. And there are times where, like, I don't know, your heart rate monitor must just like have a bit of sweat on it or something and just isn't giving you the right reading. So I'm not a slave completely to my heart rate monitor. I will sometimes just run to effort. And I think when you do the two, I think that is quite a good way to be, because you don't want to be over-reliant, I don't think, on any one measurement. But if you do use a heart rate monitor enough, it'll give you a rough idea of where you should be. And that's kind of what I do. And then when I went into the race, for an example, I don't wear the heart rate monitor, I just run to feel. So I think by doing a mixture of the two, I've probably more often than not been able to run in the right sort of zone. And a lot of that, I mean, a heart rate monitor is not perfect. There's lots of things that could impact on why your heart rate might be higher on one day than another day. If you could lactate test every single rep, that would be maybe better. But yeah, I think in terms of tools that are just readily available to people, that it's one of the better ones if you combine it with your own sort of internal feel.
Yeah, so I think that's really important what you just said, is that you really need to link it back to that internal feel. So in terms of monitoring, you need a balance of that external signal noise ratio. You've got to get a good signal from external, but you have to internally get the feel for what you're doing as well, and get that matched up. So I'm interested, Dougie, and I think our listeners will be interested about your treadmill testing, because you didn't go to any fancy place and pay a lot of money for that. And I think it's really important that people can think that they can actually do this as a DIY. So tell us how you organized for this.
Yeah, so I'd bought a lactate meter, which was like, I can't remember, it's maybe £200 or something like that. So it is a bit of an expense, but I mean, I bought that and the strips that go along with it. It took me a long time to actually get around to using it, because initially, I think when I'd got that, I'd planned to just use it myself in like some of the videos that you see on YouTube. But it's quite hard to do that if you have just no scientific background.
Yeah.
So what my cousin is, he's got like a sports science degree and done a number of lactate tests for athletes that he coaches as well. So basically, we just jumped on the treadmill in the garage with him there and did a sort of step test where I'd run 3 minutes at a certain pace, do a test, 3 minutes at another pace, do a test, 3 minutes at another pace, and so on, and then plot out the results basically on a bit of paper. And then from that, passed a screenshot onto Lewis, and then it just gives you a rough idea of roughly where your turn points are. And within that, I mean, you could refine that the next time you do the test, because you might miss a step on the test where there would have been a more dramatic turn. But it gives you like a vague idea of, or actually vague's probably not the right word there. It gives you a fairly good idea of when your physiology is changing. And when we did that test, I think it actually gave results that I probably would have guessed before. So maybe 2 weeks before that, done a half marathon at around about the exact same pace that turned out from that test to be around about where my LT2 was, which is probably what you would imagine. Yeah. So I think it kind of backed up my internal feel as well. But again, we're going back to, it's useful having your internal sense backed up by external data. Yeah.
So one of the good things was it did actually give us some valuable information that we discussed at length, because it helped us plan which side of LT2 we were getting, you know, whether we work a wee bit higher than LT2 for a while, or whether it was actually better working a bit below LT2 and prolonging things. And so we had a kind of useful discussion about that. And I think it did alter a little bit what our thinking was, and helped us kind of hone your plan a bit better.
Yeah, it definitely did. And I think, like you say, it wasn't too difficult to organize. It wasn't too fancy a setup. It wasn't like I went to an all singing, all dancing lab to do it. But yeah. It gave us, I think, this sort of guide that gives you more confidence in terms of what you're doing and allows you to plan a bit more specifically, which for me, I think is really helpful, because in the past I've had a tendency to overtrain. So I think this has been really helpful in helping me avoid that.
Yeah.
And do that with a bit more confidence.
Yeah.
Let's get to the race.
I want to know, so putting all this together, you know, how was the race, you know, like how did you feel going into it, you know, and how did it go whilst you were running it? I mean, obviously we know some of the data in terms of splits and times, but some of the listeners perhaps don't know how it's gone. So I'd be interested to, and Lewis, you were there, so, you know, you might have some better idea how the race unfolded too. But Dougie, tell us about it. Tell us about it until that last lap as well.
Yeah, so I came into it feeling really confident, or I'd say actually maybe better to say I felt really relaxed coming into it, because I'd had a really good training block that meant that I felt like I was physically as prepared as I could be, and I felt like I had as good a plan as I could have for how I was going to approach the race in general and how I was going to respond to any issues that came up. So I didn't have a really clear idea of what time I wanted to run or where I wanted to finish or anything sort of specific like that. But I just felt like I'd done what I needed to do to just go into the race feeling like whatever was going to happen was going to be something that I could look back on and be happy with. Yeah, my plan was pretty simple. It was just to find the right sort of effort that I'd drilled into myself through lots and lots of training, and then just try to go on autopilot for as long as I could and conserve energy as much as I could and just keep going for 100K basically at that pace. That was basically my plan.
And what was that pace? You know, like, I think the first 50K you were in, like, was it about 3:17 or 3:18, I think you were, for the first 50K, was it?
Yeah, I think it was 3:18, but I didn't really pay any attention to
pace.
Well, not specifically. I mean, that's I was going in completely cavalier, like, and completely blind, but I wasn't like overly focusing on my watch. Like, I didn't have a specific time I wanted to run at the end. I didn't have a split that I was wedded to. I just had an effort level that I wanted to.
I think that's really you know, important. And I think a lot of people are, you know, ball and chain to the pace, and, you know, they forget about that effort side of things. That's really interesting you say that, because I think many people will be going, right, I need to keep hitting these 6x per mile or per K or whatever it is. So really good to hear. Yeah. Sorry, Dougie.
Yeah, I think, like, in a lot of races previously, I've been very focused on time specifically. Yeah. But I mean, I think in the 100K that I did in Perth, the approach that I took was better. I just wasn't worrying about those sort of external things, but equally I was just confident that the sort of pace that I was running was manageable and sustainable for me. But yeah, it meant that I didn't really have any idea of what pace we were going through 50K. I didn't know what pace the race was at that point. I didn't actually know the pace until maybe 75K. I think somebody said it was 6:33. Which, if you'd said before the race, are you going to run 6:33? I would have definitely not thought that. So, that's probably one of the reasons why I ran faster, was because I wasn't thinking about what pace I was going to run.
I mean, the other good thing was, Simon, in the early part of the race, there's probably about a group of 10 of you, and it whittled down to 7 for a good section of the race until things started to drop off. But, you know, there seemed to be quite a good bit of camaraderie. You know, you were all taking turns to lead a little bit, and it was a pretty solid group for some time. What was it like running in a group like that?
Yeah, it was really good. There was, like you say, a big group through 50k that sort of gradually whittled down towards 70k, and yeah, there's sort of like a little bit of chat going on in the group, and people were kind of sharing about the wind, like you say. It's not like it was super windy, but you know, it's just a takes a little bit of a load off every couple of laps when you just tuck in. I think maybe from about 70k it got down to 3 of us. And I think all 3 of us, me, James Turner, who was second in the end, and Joe Turner, who was third, I think we were all kind of conscious that we were sort of away from the group and running at a pretty good pace. So if we could share the pace between us a little bit for a few laps, and that was going to help all of us basically to kind of keep the rhythm going. So we did that for maybe, I don't know, 10k or so. And then after 80k is where it started to get a little bit more, interesting, I suppose. We were each probably starting to go through difficult moments at difficult points. Difficult moments at different points. And it sort of started to split up from that point.
So tell us about I'm actually going to be interested in the contrast between yourself, Dougie, and Kyle, who's also run 100k at Perth. You know, you go into a pain cave at some point, and we'd kind of discussed beforehand we had several discussions leading up to the race around how do you manage knowing that at some point you're going to go into the pain cave, and we discussed a number of strategies that you could kind of flip between. What were the kind of things that were working for you during that difficult patches?
So I guess like the whole way through the race, I was trying to keep my mental state as stable as I could. So that was, and that didn't really change whether it was the start or the finish. So my aim throughout it was to not get overly wrapped up in any sort of thoughts or feelings that would come. So just accept any thought or feeling and let it go, rather than sort of getting tied up in emotions. Yeah. So that was kind of like my baseline that I wanted to keep. But for sort of 60k or so, it's really easy to do that because nothing is that hard. So I was sort of having a broad focus at that point and taking things in a little bit more, letting them go, but not overly concentrating, because you can't concentrate for 6.5 hours. So you almost want to just sort of float along there, not getting too excited, not getting worried about anything, but just kind of letting everything come and go gradually. And then once I got to 85k, that's where I started to struggle a little bit, and all of a sudden I was getting dropped. I was going from second then into third. I was starting to obviously find it a lot tougher, but still at that point I'm still hanging on to that general plan of letting those thoughts and feelings come and go, not denying them, but just accepting them and then letting them go. So that's kind of the baseline, and within that I had various things that I would try and use to help me do that. And they were things like having sort of mental cues to help me stop going down a sort of negative spiral and sort of switch my focus back to be on sort of just the moment, and sort of staying in that kind of flow state, I suppose people tend to call it. So yeah, 60k, 70k, letting it come and go. And then from that point on, my my focus just started to get a bit more narrow, and I'm sort of concentrating a lot more on what I'm doing, and I'm sort of switching on from that point.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, because what you're describing is something called a mindfulness technique, where you're kind of letting things come, you know, letting emotions and any concerns kind of rise, but also fall without actually doing anything about it. You're aware that it's there, but you're neither trying to push it away nor do something magical with it, but you're just kind of breathing through it and just letting it go. And as a background, that's great until things kind of really start piercing that shell. And then, as you say, you've got to do one or two things to try and just keep that at bay.
Yeah, so an example of the sorts of things that I would actually actively do are, it can be as simple as, like, I'll just take my cap off, or I'll throw my gloves off, or I'll change what I'm having nutrition wise. I might just have flat Coke instead of a Morton drink, or I might grab a water and pour it over my head, or it could even be like, I might just like slap myself in the face gently or something, just to kind of like just wake myself up a little bit and keep just stopping myself from negative spiraling, because it's really easy for that to happen at that point, because it is quite a negative place to be. If you're 88k into a race, you've been dropped and you feel tired, like all of those things are true. Like, you can't say this isn't happening. You can't just say, actually, I don't feel tired and it's fine. Like, it is actually a challenging place to be. Yeah. So I think you almost have to just like accept that, and then just think about what you can do. So basically, I was trying to use those sort of mental cues to keep myself doing that as often as I could, and then start working through what can I actually do to get through this as best I can. And once you start going on that process, it kind of spirals the other way, or that's how I found it.
Yeah.
It's almost like the negative part happens, you're on the defensive, and then you just have to get through that bit, and then you start working back. So I was almost defending for a couple of laps, stabilizing my mental state, and then starting to work back more productively.
So that's great. And it came to a very exciting last lap, because you'd been in third, and then over a lap or two, you got yourself back into second. And then it was clear that the leader, although the leader had been probably about 20-odd seconds in front, by the time it came to the last lap, it was only 10 seconds in front. So that was quite... We were all at the Scottish Athletics tents, and she said, "Go, Dougie, come on, you can do it." What happened as you went through there and you heard the shouts and knew there was just a lap to go?
Yeah, it was a really like exciting atmosphere going through it. You know, like you say, everybody was getting pretty excited, and yeah, there was a real buzz coming through. And yeah, it was like a really fun moment. I was hurting pretty badly at that point, but I had nothing to lose really at that point. I knew that I was going to get there. I knew I was going to run well. If I come second, it was still going to be a really good run. I was going to run a massive PB. Mm-hmm. So yeah, at that point, like you say, I've closed a little bit. So I know something's on. It's... you know, you're on home turf with everybody cheering for the Scottish best. Lap to go. It's the ideal situation to be. I mean, yeah, it's still quite uncomfortable, but it's a pretty exciting situation to be in. And I think at that point I was just really immersed in the race, that was all just like adding to that experience. Like, I wasn't thinking specifically, I'm going to try and chase him down and catch him, I can win this. I was just like elevated by the circumstances and the support and the chance that I had. So I wasn't really grabbing it, but I was just experiencing it, I suppose.
And then though, halfway through that last lap, you knew you were gaining. There was a decision point, wasn't there, around, shit, do I just settle for second or do I try and actually beat this guy?
Yeah, there was in the... That was probably the only part in the race where I was sort of thinking tactically, in that I was, like you say, part of me was thinking, maybe I'll just settle and take second because I'm happy enough with that. I'll just jog in. And then another part of me was thinking, should I try and close this as early as possible and just get past and finish it on the back straight, because I don't really want it to go to a sprint finish, because... I lost in this. I had 100% losing record in sprint finishes in 100k before.
I won 5,800 guy as well.
I know, exactly. Yeah, I was deciding, do I try and catch it early? Do I leave it late? But actually, you're so tired at that point. You're just keeping going. So, like, whatever happens. I just caught him when I caught him. It wasn't like I tried to close the gap. And, coming into the sort of last K or last 800 meters, I'd closed up, saw it as that was my chance really at that point to grab it and try and be as decisive as I could be going past. And I actually felt good at that point coming into the home. I call it the home straight. It is the home straight, really, isn't it? I mean, it's quite a long
one. It's a long one. Yeah.
It's 700 meters. So, yeah, I knew that I had it was going to be, if he was going to come back past, he was going to have to be very strong in the home straight. I sort of saw the opportunity and tried to sort of just push it all the way home from there.
And you did, and that was the fastest lap, your fastest lap of the race. It was your last lap.
That was my question as well. Like, yeah. You know, what was that like? Time for your last lap.
I think it was under 9 minutes, but I mean, it's like a 2-point-something K lap.
2.4K, yeah.
it's quite a random, quite an arbitrary distance.
It is a random.
The fastest one of my race, I think. So, but I think what's more important is the ones you do in between. So
absolutely. I mean, that's definitely. I know there was. I think there's been another sprint finish in the past of the 100K with Rob Turner and
that was even closer. I think that was
But I mean, that's still amazing for 100K last lap. Was it James Turner who got the second place? Was it?
Yeah.
James Turner had led the race for a lot of it, and that's actually his first 100K, I think. So to debut at 6:34 is
very good
run.
So how did you feel, like, you know, obviously, you know, getting the second was great, but to get the win, you know, automatic selection for the GB team as well for the World 100K Champs, is it the World 100K Champs? I think.
Yeah, they're in December, so I've got the criteria, but you have to wait and see what happens with these things.
Right. Okay. Well, surely, but let's touch.
So they've got the Comrades Marathon, I think, to look at as well. I think there's a number of selection points, Kyle.
Right.
So, although you might think it's in the bag with UK Athletics, you never know.
Fingers crossed.
We're just gonna have to wait. I was gonna ask though, Kyle. You know, because I did say earlier. I mean, Dougie's told us his mental strategy. I mean, we worked on some mental strategies for you, but they were probably a bit different. What can you remember? Yeah, maybe you can't remember. It was
Really. You know, I think the I think that the thing about me and when it comes to running is, you know, I like to switch off, you know, and try not to think about anything. You know, there's maybe similarities, and you talked about trying to get in a flow state. You know, I think for me, you know, I do tend to try and get in that flow state, and I think I'm quite good at getting in that flow state. But also I'm quite good at being able to, like, just what you said about being able to, like, right, when do I need to take my next gel? You know, what am I taking for this lap? It's particularly in a 100K, like, you know, a lapped course. But probably one of the differences, you know, I kind of find strength in just kind of why am I doing this, you know? And you know, for having kids, I think that's quite a big one, is just knowing, like, you know, let's get this done and make them proud, you know, although they don't actually care. But yeah, I think there's a lot of, like, would you call it extrinsic motivation from my perspective?
That's probably intrinsic motivation. That's intrinsic in the way that you're describing it. And I think you used to put initials on your knuckles, didn't
you? That's right, yeah. I used to put, my kids are called Logan and Lenny, so I used to put an L, you know, on my knuckle, you know, and which could be mistaken for loser, but it certainly I think it worked, you know, it worked for me. But a lot of things you've said there resonates quite well with me, you know, just about when the shit hits a fan, how do you get out of that, you know, what are the what are the strategies, or what's the process to get back into a sort of state where you're able to continue, and it does, you know, with ultra running in particular, there's so many wobbles that you can have, and I've had, and you do, they go away. It's you know, or if they don't go away, you reset your expectations, and you know, you go into the next sort of B goal or whatever it would be, you know. So
yeah, the longer the distance you go, the more that mental strategies can help you. And I guess in 100K, you have quite a lot of time to use those things. If you're in an 8-meter race, you don't have that much time to think about what you're going to do.
It's different strategies. And just to be clear, Dougie, I do program different strategies for the short races, you know. And
you don't have a couple of K to sit and think.
No, none of that. No, we've got very different things to focus on. Yeah. So tell us a wee bit about your nutrition plan, because that's one of the keys to getting through, isn't it? Is, you know, when Kyle first started this, we probably threw in two or three gels every now and again, but over the years, you know, there's been a lot of clarity around nutrition plans, how much carbs you need, but also a mix of things, you know, about electrolytes, about flat coke, about different tastes, you know, all that kind of thing. So tell us about your plan.
Yes, I had a plan. I had a base plan for the whole 100K race, which was alternating between gels and drinks, carb drinks. So that was basically in an hour, I'd be taking two gels and one carbohydrate drink, giving me about 90 grams of carbs in an hour. And that plan that I'd given to Jenny would take me all the way to 100K. But I had marked on there at 60K that this is the point at which I might actually start asking you for different things. So I had that clear plan. But I also knew that in the second half, or in the final third of the race, I'd want a bit of flexibility there, because I remembered from last year, that was one of the things that I'd either got a little bit of flavor fatigue, or I just wanted something different just to sort of perk me up a little bit. So one of the things that I had in both years, but this year I had more of it, was flat coke. So had that in as an option. I had bottles of water where Jenny could add like an electrolyte tablet to if I requested it. And then there were a few other things that I had there. Like one of the things that we had that I didn't actually use was just like a mint, so that I could ask for that if I wanted. So that's like a totally different flavor change. And something that was like one of the sort of possible mental cues that I could have used. I could have come around and said, I just want that on the next lap because it's different. And it might just like spark me out of a of a sort of negative spiral that I was sort of talking about before. But yeah, coming back to my plan, it was clear to 60K, and then it had a sort of rough structure from there and a few different options to allow me to sort of just say, actually, I'm going to have this, I'm going to have that. And I think that was good because I didn't want to have a fixed plan after that point, because I wanted to have the ability to say, actually, I want this, I want that. And I was also conscious that you might just like miss something, you might drop something. So you don't want a plan that is like super, super rigid, because it's unlikely that things are going to go 100% perfect the whole way through. And yeah, I think having enough structure that you kind of roughly what you're doing, but with flexibility is the key. And that was what worked for me on the day.
And how did you, you know, leading up to the race, you know, how did you know that your gut was going to cope with 90 grams of carbs per hour? Tell us what you did in the run up to the race to ensure that you know, because it's not just the running training or the mental training. You've got to train your gut as well, haven't you?
Yeah, so I'd practiced. So I guess through having done 100K last year, done a few marathons, I've run using gels quite a lot over time, and generally I'm quite lucky in that I don't tend to have too many issues with that. And in training for this, most weeks I was sort of practicing taking on roughly that sort of volume. We tried a couple of different things during the build up, but yeah, generally there were quite a few times where I was practicing taking in that sort of amount and taking it in slightly different orders. So maybe I would have gel drink, or maybe I'd switch that about. Maybe I'd have three gels in a row and then two drinks. So I just deliberately practiced doing things in a random order, because I wanted to know that if I did do that on the race, it wasn't going to like totally throw me off. So I guess practicing it on training runs was one of the things. Then another thing that I sort of did to prepare was the week before, the couple of weeks before, I would practice, what am I going to eat on the morning, how long before the race? So wake up 2 hours before and eat something light, and then do my training session. And that would give me confidence that it's unlikely to cause me an issue on race day if I know that it's worked for me a couple of times before, as well as potentially training my gut slightly. But I guess it gives you that confidence that you're sort of controlling what you can control going into the race, accepting that you can't make it go perfect, but you can at least have an influence on it by controlling certain things.
So you're pretty meticulous really in your planning, but at the same time not rigid. So your meticulousness actually included being variable or having variable outcomes about what to take or not take. So you planned that into it too.
Yeah, I think that's like quite key, I suppose, for me anyway, in that I tried to think through what are the things that I can control, what are the things that I can't control, and then within the things that I can't control, think through what are the things that I could actually influence in there by the things that I can control, and then drill down from that. So like an obvious one is like taking it to the very basic level, I could say I might just feel rubbish on the day and I might have a bad run. So then what can I control that's going to reduce the likelihood of that happening? And there's lots of things that you can do within that. And you can just drill that down quite far, kind of the sort of, if this happens, what will I do scenarios, yeah, and thinking through that. And I would kind of do that quite far. And then I'd almost come back to a point of saying, if something goes wrong, I'll manage it. And that's almost where we got to before the race, was saying, I've prepared well, I've thought through different mental strategies. If something goes wrong, anything goes wrong, I'll manage it. And I think you almost have to come back to that point, because yeah, no matter like how many scenarios you've thought about before the race. Like something else might happen, or it might not happen like that. And you can almost overstress yourself by trying to say, oh, I've thought through literally everything that can happen. Because you probably haven't. And you, what are you going to do on the race if something else happens? So you almost have to do that exercise and then come back to accept running's unpredictable, my body's unpredictable. But I know if something goes wrong, I've got a coping strategy and I'll make the best of whatever that scenario
and,
is.
And that's a great summary, really, of two key psychological bits of research that I'm going to throw in here, Dougie. So there's a thing called if-then planning, which is what we used by a guy called Golwitzer, who started this off in the late 90s. But it's really about if this happens, if this particular thing doesn't go so well, then I will do what? You know, and putting some behaviours in and around that. But you're also quite right that once you've done a few of those scenarios, you need to come back to a higher level belief, which you kind of get into your core, which basically says, you know what, whatever happens on the day, I'm going to cope with this. Whatever happens, I'll find a way. Whatever happens, I'm going to get through this. No matter what. And you come back to that kind of core belief about what's possible and what you're capable of doing, regardless of whether you might have seen it before or not, or whether it's new or different. And that's one of the things that I think can give you confidence when you step on the line, is recognizing that whatever's going to be thrown at me in this race, I'm going to find a way through it.
Yeah, definitely. I think that was going back to saying that I felt quite relaxed on the start line. I think that was one of the big reasons for that. Like I felt like I'd done the physical prep, but I felt like I'd also done the psychological prep that meant that if something goes wrong, I'll do as best I can. And maybe it'll be 6:30 something, maybe it'll be outside 7, but it'll be the best that I could do in that situation. And I think that's all you can really do. Like, you can do all the training in the world, something might just go wrong and you're just gonna have to do the best that you can. So I think that was one of the keys for me, was knowing that I had covered both angles as well as I could, and I didn't know what would happen, didn't know what the result would be, but I was pretty relaxed that it would be the best.
So we know what the result is now. You know, you ran 6:34. You're now the third fastest all-time Scot. You're the sixth fastest all-time in the UK. You've got a qualifying time well under the 6:38 qualifying time that UK Athletics are looking for the World Championships. I'd say that you had a pretty successful day, Dougie.
Yeah, I couldn't have asked for any more than that. Yeah, that was more than I was expecting. I mean, I didn't have specific expectations going in. I didn't know what I was going to run. I didn't know where I was going to finish, but I didn't think I would run as fast as that, and I didn't think I'd win. So, I'm absolutely over the moon with it. Yeah, really happy with it.
Yeah, well, as a coach, you know, my view was I thought you were going to run probably low 6:40s, and that if everything went well, you might just sneak under that 6:38. That was my expectation. So you certainly, you know, you went way beyond that, and it was. Fantastic to see. And I would want to say, Doug, it was a real privilege to actually be part of that on the day and be part of the team supporting you and, you know, the effort that you put in. But I'm also going to give a shout out for Jenny, because she actually found it almost as riveting as an 800 metres towards the end in terms of the excitement. The last three laps, you know, we both needed to get our mental strategies in gear, try and cope with the anxiety of, is it going to come through or not? You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many people that input into it. So yeah, like I'm really happy with what I did, but I mean, you put a lot of work into Jenny's sort of was there supporting me. Yeah. a lot of friends and family were there. Yeah, and all of those people make those things possible for you. So, and even the people who you're racing against, like if it wasn't as tight a race as that, I don't think any of us would have run as fast as we did if the, you know, like Scotland team hadn't been as enthusiastic cheering and as good at getting everything organized, that wouldn't be possible. So yeah, it's not it's never just one person who makes that happen. Like you do your best, but everybody else contributes to it. So I'm very grateful for all of that.
So what's next, Dougie? What are you doing now?
Recovering.
Yep.
Yeah, I think I need a sort of period of not being as focused on a specific goal.
Yeah.
Because things have, I'd had a slight down period over Christmas, but I was pretty focused on Valencia and the lead up to that. There was, after that, I was pretty quickly thinking about this race. So, I mean, that's almost like 4 or 5 months of being fairly focused in my training. And I think actually having like a little bit of time where I'm less race focused will be good. And I'll still do a lot of training because I never really don't. But it'll be nice to be slightly less intense about what I'm training for. And I guess we'll discuss between us what that actually looks like. But I suppose probably try and get a little bit more balanced in my fitness because I'm very, very weighted towards aerobic slow running at the moment, and I probably need to become less slow, if not fast.
And I think that's kind of one of the things, you know, just stepping back and looking at the big picture for any distance runner, particularly an ultra runner, is you groove that LT1 in particular, and the gap between LT1 and LT2, you know, so that in the middle range of that's where you're operating mainly. And so what happens is that your max VO2, which is the maximum volume of oxygen that you can take in per kilogram of body weight and utilize, your max VO2 tends to go down towards your threshold pace. And your threshold can sometimes go down a bit more towards your aerobic pace. So one of the things that you know, all ultra folk need to do from time to time is to focus on those other two ranges to try and pull the max VO2 up a bit, pull the LT2 up a bit, and give a bit of headroom, for want of a better word. So without needing to focus too much on races, I think training-wise, we'll need to work some of those elements into your program.
Yeah, it's that'd be a change for me.
exciting times, and yeah, I mean, fantastic result, Dougie, and you know there was some other fantastic results, you know, throughout the, you know, this, and certainly in the Scotland team as well, and you know you led the Scottish team to the team title as well for, you know, first time in a while, I think.
That match for Aberdeen club records getting pretty far away from you, Kyle. You're gonna have to attack it next year.
Do you know what? It's funny. I don't even know if Chris has got the Metro record because Simon Pride, he's got the Metro record. He's Metro Aberdeen,
right?
Yeah.
Was he Metro Aberdeen when he did that? Was he, because Simon tended to flit around a number of the Northeast clubs.
I think he was Metro. I think it's, looking at the rankings, his name's Metro, but who knows? But
all right, okay.
It's funny. I mean, I'm like the fifth on the list now, you know, in terms of Metro with my time. So it's like I need to get my finger out again. But like, yeah, I mean, you know, Chris Richardson had a great run too and got a huge PB. You know, was in fourth place, second in the Scottish Championships. You know, a great run from him and well executed too. And you know, I think backed up.
He took a different approach to me and said he called us a low 6:40 before he started and very much delivered. So yeah, he was got to give kudos to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be fair, and it was quite interesting because Chris, he had a rough patch very early on in the race. and which is quite unusual. But he got himself through that, and he just kept going, and he kind of just worked his way through the field again and back into fourth place, which was great.
Yeah, impressive. But no, I mean, yeah, final question. I mean, the last time we had you on the show, Dougie, it was me and you and Tommy, but you've got your coach here, and, you know, is there... what's the relationship been like with you, both of you? Obviously, you're not going to say it's awful or anything, because it's not, but has it evolved over the years? You know, like, is, because, you know, from my perspective, I found, you know, you learn a lot from him. You still rely on your coach and for guidance and advice and accountability and whatnot. But, you know, is do you feel like, what is that like, you know, without putting words in your mouth?
Yeah, it's definitely evolved over time. Like, I think we started working together in 2011, so over that time you get to know each other a lot. I've probably grown up and matured and changed quite a lot over that period. And running is a massive part of my life, and Lewis is a massive part of my life through running. And Lewis also coaches Jenny, so, you know, like, it feels like we're in contact all the time, really. And I think a lot of that it's shaped my running, and that also has an impact on my life as a whole. So yeah, I think there's a lot of, like, coaching that goes on in there, but also it's probably deeper than just athlete coach relationship. I think you know, over time, Lewis has helped me through running, but also just through difficult moments in my life as a whole. So I think it's probably a deeper relationship than athlete coach. You're maybe slightly cringing at that, Lewis, but I'd say that's true. I mean, I'm really grateful for all the running help, but I think probably just the way that we talk through it, it has a more of a impact on my life as a whole. So I think, I'm really grateful for that. And it's working well running-wise at the moment, but I also feel like I'm in a good place with running generally as a whole, and a big part of that is because Lewis has helped me get there.
I think that, you know, the relationship has evolved over time, and you can't keep coaching somebody for you know 13 years, I think, by the sounds of it, without actually liking them.
Yeah.
You know, so that's good. But you're right, it does become a bit deeper, and things evolve. And what's evolved, I think, Dougie, with us is there's far more equity and balance now in terms of, you know, for the running point of view, in terms of I'm not necessarily prescribing stuff. We kind of have a melting pot of stuff around a discussion, and we discuss it as, you know, as two equals. And what emerges out of that is a plan that fits best for you. You know, so it's not my plan, it's not your plan, it's a plan that we've spoken around and has emerged, you know, out of the mists of a lot of different inputs. And I think that you know, so what I would say that is that for all of the athletes that I've had long-term relationships with, that's the way it's kind of worked and evolved. And it, you know, from my point of view, it's something I enjoy doing, and something that's been a big part of my life too. And you can't help but you know, have running's a metaphor in many respects for other areas of life. You know, you go through a pain cave, you know, whether you're running 800 meters or running an ultra marathon, you're going to hit a pain cave, whether it's lactic acid or whatever at the ultra end. But how you deal with that is a metaphor for life, and how you deal with other life difficulties. and you can bring a lot of those learnings into other areas, you know, professionally, into your work life and your relationships and other challenges. So it's I'll stop now because I'm probably waxing lyrical, but but it's been good. Yeah
and you know, long may it continue. And thanks for coming on the show, Dougie, and it's been brilliant. I mean you could stay on if you want. We're basically just going to round it off, aren't we? And you know, you've got a key with Jenny, and you know the running scene probably better than myself, so but I mean, what's happened like the last couple of weeks? There's quite a few things that have gotten on. We talked about the ACP. Do you want to round up the results? I've got some of them in front of me here. Just, you know, I don't want to leave anyone out. But we obviously had Chris Richardson from my club, Metro 640. And Sage Pierce Higgins, of, you know, it's a new one for me.
Sage,
his first 100k. Sage, yeah. He got bronze in the Scottish Championships in 6:55, and I think he was first over 40 as well, which is a great result for an older lad. And Sheena Logan, this is her first 100k race. Yeah. And
Sheena was brilliant. Sheena was brilliant, Kyle, because she smiled all the way through, every time she came through that loop for the lap, she was just brilliant. And amazing. So hats off to her. She really managed it very well.
I think she asked her husband if she'd actually finished when she...
She did, yeah.
She ready to go for another lap.
Amazing.
Well, I think that's because she was told that she had three to go when she had four to go. So somebody'd actually...
Oh, no.
But she still smiled through it. That's what really impressed me.
Yeah. That's ace. Catherine Cowie got the silver medal in 8:26. And Fiona Gibson, Dundee Hawk Hill, and bronze as well. So, yeah, great runs. I mean, I'm not going to read out all the results because there's quite a number of different races within races. Like there's also the 50k champs. So a couple of quick times, notably, which I thought was great to see. You know, Andy Davies and Ronnie Richmond both got the British Road 50k record.
So they were under the British Road 50 record. They just missed the overall record for 50k, right. but they go to the road. Well, the first placer was definitely under the old record,
which was 2:48:25 by Ronnie Richmond and Andy Davies, who's, you know, a Commonwealth Games athlete himself, a few seconds behind in 2:48:33. Notably, one, you know, a listener of the show, Jen Whetton, was got the win.
Yeah.
Which is great to see, your first ultra in a cracking 3:20, I think it's 3:29.
Is it 3:29 or 3:26? I can't remember. She ran really well.
So a great run, just slightly outside the record. And Alison McGill, you know, the West Island Way champion from last year, got the silver, I believe. Did she? She got the silver. So, yeah, great runs from them. And in the men's Scottish Championships, John Spears got the honours in 3:21:21. The one I wanted to, you know, just mention was the 100K, the female 100K winner. And, I mean, what a time she ran. What was her name?
7:03, a new European record.
Sarah Webster, 7:03:48, Isle of Man athlete. Amazing time. I think she ran about, I think it was, you know, about that last year as well. So
she ran slightly faster last year, but because there wasn't any drug testing at the event, it couldn't be ratified as a European record. So they made sure there was drug testing at this event.
For this one.
So it has been ratified,
right?
Or it will be ratified.
Okay.
The first two English girls in that 100K, they were super smooth. They looked really great, because the second runner was, you know, about 7:07 or something, and another fantastic time, but just looked absolutely just like not quite running on air, but it was very, very smooth. It's great to see.
Yeah, it's great. And anything else that's been happening with the Scottish 10 mile champs?
Well, Scottish 10 mile, you know, so my namesake Lewis Hannigan.
Great name.
He had a good win. So, that looked pretty good. And Annabel Simpson won the female category. So Annabel was part of the victorious Fife team the previous week in the Scottish road relays that Jenny was also running in. So I think Annabelle's made a bit of a comeback from the sounds of it. I think she's maybe been a bit kind of down and out for a little while, but then has made a bit of a comeback. Maybe Dougie, you know more about that than me.
Yeah, she seems to be back running really well. I think she was quickest leg of the day at the sixth stage back.
Yeah.
And then obviously a good run at the 10 mile champ, so yeah. It looks like she's back and back and fully fit. So
yeah, I'm gonna give a special mention to Sean Chalmers, and it was great run from Sean. I mean, he was so the winner was 49:07. And Sean was 11 seconds down on that. But the reason I'm going to shout him out is I follow Sean on Strava. He's a teacher. And bloody hell, this guy gets up at 5:30 in the morning and he churns out sub 5 minute miles in some of his sessions. Some of his sessions are vicious. And it's it wasn't even dawn, you know. I mean, he was probably wearing a head torch or something. Some of the sessions this guy puts out are quite staggering. And there's a shout out to him, because a year before, I mean, he'd had a significant long standing injury that took a good while to clear up, but he's clearly back in shape, and I believe he is looking to run a marathon together with someone else I coach, you know, Miles Edwards. But I think that's the Amsterdam one that Sean's looking at, and Miles will do Amsterdam, but he's also going to do London in a few 3 weeks time.
I didn't know he's doing both.
Well, that's what he tells me. But we'll get London out of the way first.
When's Amsterdam? Is that like
autumn? Amsterdam.
Why do I think it's? I'm thinking of Rotterdam. That's what it is.
Rotterdam is it the week after London or something? It's generally around about the same time. Yeah.
It's another man with serious range, Miles Edwards.
Yeah, he has, of course. Yeah.
Yeah,
well, time will tell. He hasn't done a marathon yet, so we'll see what his range is.
It's his debut. We've got cut the guy some slack, Kyle. You know, it's his first one. You know, he's never run this kind of mileage before, and as you know, as you both know, marathons they need a cycle. You know, you got to start somewhere. And then you build on that. And generally, what you start with is a bit less than what you're going to finish with, you know, two or three cycles down the road. So,
well, that's maybe not in my case, but the less said about that.
You did pretty well. You know, come on.
Yeah, come on. I don't know if I'll get near that, but anyway, we'll get back to it. We'll talk. That's another episode.
We don't want to discuss that.
Less said about me, the better at the moment. Brilliant. There was World Cross Country Champs as well. We had a few Scottish representatives taking part. We had off the top of my head, Scott Stirling,
Challenging race though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was in Belgrade. It was hot. It was a funny kind of course. It was one of these kind of American type courses made to try and look a bit European, but it was a fast course, but it was also very, very hot.
Yeah,
which was surprising the heat in Belgrade at this time of the year. But
a few obstacles thrown in there for them as well.
Yeah.
I see that, yeah. A couple of APLs. God, yeah. But no, Scott Stirling, you know, 74th in the senior men's race. I think just seeing his progression over the last few years to be, he's almost gone up another notch and, you know, in his running, I think it's amazing be called up for a GB vest. And then Alice Goodall, 46th in the senior women's race, Craig Shannon in 35th in the junior men's race, and Natasha Phillips, 30th in the junior women's race. So some good times, good positions there.
Some good performances. Tough conditions. I think Alice said, this is the toughest race I've ever run. it goes off like a 1500 meter race, you know, and then this doesn't light up. It's staggering.
I mean, probably lots of other things that have happened and are about to happen. And the only one I'm going to mention is Scottish Running Week has just been launched, which is in aid of Athletics Trust Scotland. So it's going to take place between the 3rd and the 9th of June this year. If you look at the website, scottishrunningweek.com, you can sign your club up, sign your organisation up. And essentially, the idea of the Scottish Running Week is to be as creative or less creative, as much creativity as you want. You can get your whole club involved, do a 5K handicap. You can, or just simply just take part in a 5K challenge, or, you know, Tartan Running Shorts are going to have a special guest on or two. Lots of things are going to be taking place in Scottish Running Week. And it's the second one. The first one was last year and it was called National Running Week. So this one's called Scottish Running Week. So, I'm looking forward to seeing Coach Lewis get his carbon plated shoes on to do a 5K. So we'll have to do a TRS challenge. Eh? Who can?
You'll have to put my arm well above my back for that.
I like it. Well, brilliant. But Dougie,
this has been a masterclass, shall we say, on ultra running. I mean, seriously, I think we'll be directing folk to this episode for a long time yet to say this is how you prepare. It's all in there, all the details. So absolutely fantastic to have you on the show, Dougie, and for you to be so honest with with your preparation and just everything around the race. So great, well done.
Thank you. Yeah, well done, Dougie. You're just trying to obviously match your better half, so it must be pretty competitive in the Selman household at the moment.
we're a good support to each other.
Good to hear.
Selmania rules. there you go.
Brilliant. Well, if you do want to get in contact with us, folks, it's tartanrunningshorts@gmail.com. You can get us on their social media. But other than that, folks, have a great week. And thanks again for coming on the show, Dougie. And Lewis, I'll catch up with you next couple of weeks, no doubt. So, brilliant.
Okay. Cheers now. Bye-bye. All right.
See ya.
See you later. Kyle, they bring you
heartache is yours. And that's a wrap.